there was this sort of early companies, early internet companies or tech companies in India were modeled a lot after what was happening across the world. I think the first trend that we're seeing now, especially given how unique India is the trend of building in India for India. Again, not to blow my own trumpet too much, but again, so Elastica is one example where they have developed a crowdsourced method to deliver in hinterlands of India, where a fixed cost model of logistics model or delivery model would not work economically.
Welcome to everyone to another edition of Startup Fridays, which, as you know, is a weekly conversation with accomplished entrepreneurs, VC investors, and other folk who are doing significant work in India's startup ecosystem. I'm Hari Arakli, and my guest today is Ashutosh Sharma. Ashutosh is head of investments and M&A in India for Prosus, one of the world's biggest technology investors, as many of you would know. He started out with an engineering degree in electronics from Banaras Hindu University and spent several years in some of the top companies in the industry, including Motorola, Freescale Semiconductors, and Samsung. And along the way, he also picked up an MBA from Chicago University's Booth School of Business. He turned to finance and investments. And again, he has worked in some top VC firms, including Qualcomm Ventures and Norwest Venture Partners before Prosus. And of course, Prosus's investments in India are pretty well known, including some of the country's best known startups, including PayU, Eruditus, Urban Company, Meesho, PharmEasy, Swiggy, Byju's, also the acquisition of BillDesk, and more recently, several promising companies, including Freshen's, Captain Fresh, Detect, Dehart, and WeGrow. Ashutosh, welcome to this show, and fantastic to have you with us this morning.
Thank you, Hari. Thank you so much. Great to be here. Great to be talking to you and everyone else who's joined us.
All right. So just to get us started, maybe you could start with a little bit about the path that brought you to Prosus. Maybe you can attempt a snapshot of the journey from engineering graduate to venture investor at, you know, one of the world's biggest tech investors, and then we'll go from there.
Sure. I've spent 6+ years, years at Naspers now. And honestly, Hari, I wish I could say that this was all planned. And this was completely, I mean, when I grew up or when I went to grade first or second, I was very clear that I'm going to be VC. It was never that way. I honestly had no clue what VC was before I landed in Chicago to do my MBA. And I would say the story from then on has been a story of generosity of many people. Generosity with their time and with their conviction on me.
Mm-hmm.
I barely had any finance or investing background before my MBA. I used to code and had never seen a P&L statement in my life before. And so the first one to take a punt on me was Karthi. Karthi used to head Qualcomm Ventures in India. Karthi runs his own fund in Bay Area now. And the reason why, of course, probably he hired me, looking back, is that I had some background in wireless. And that was the area which Qualcomm was focusing on. And so he was very generous in hiring someone into VC who had no finance or investing background before. So, I mean, very kind. And then the second one was Mohan Kumar at Norwest Venture Partners. Mohan, again, was very generous in his, let's say, punt on me, thinking that I can come out of wireless and do investments across sectors. And we did investments not just in tech, but non-tech healthcare, non-tech logistics, and all of that. And then more recently here at Naspers and Prosus, Hari, the entire team, starting from Russell, Dresden Stock to Martin Shop now. Funny story, I had never done consumer before I joined Naspers. And as you know, Naspers is known for consumer tech investing. And I think the generosity of all these people in their belief in me and giving me a chance to prove myself is behind where I am today. And I'm very thankful to all of them looking back.
Yeah, I also wanted to, I guess, for a more general audience, wanted to point out that one thing probably folks may not immediately think about is that process is not really a VC fund in the sense that you're not answerable to, you know, LPs and things like that. You all invest out of your own, you know, a big balance sheet. And I guess that probably brings you your own advantages and experiences and so on. We'll probably get into that a little down the line. Just thought that I will point that out. And of course, the process is very widely known in the venture ecosystems around the world. Maybe you could give us a brief history of Process's entry into India, and maybe talk about which was the first investment, how did that happen, and you know, some of those things.
Sure. And you're absolutely right, Hari. We're not a fund, and that gives us a few advantages, and we can talk about them later. But look, Process's entry into India predates me. Before I joined the team here, the team had already made two successful investments, one in Flipkart and the other one in Ibibo, which we have both exited since then. I specifically joined Process, as I said, 6 years back. Since then, we have made many investments, as you highlighted, Swiggy, Urban Company, Farmeasy, Meesho, etc., etc. Swiggy was the first one. Hari, and took me a lot of time to get there, and just another funny anecdote, before my investment or our investment in Swiggy, the entire amount of money that I put to work at Norwest, the total amount across all investments was $75 million. The first check in Swiggy itself was $60 million. And I honestly couldn't sleep for a couple of weeks thinking, oh man, like what if this goes south and so on. But but look, I mean, I had known Harsha for a long time before that. We were investors in Swiggy, even at Norwest. And so that was very comforting. The other thing which really helped us while we made that decision is that Process had many investments in food delivery across the world. And Swiggy was not the first one that we were making. So there was a lot of institutional knowledge around the sector, which again sort of helped us realize that this is the better model to go with, and this will be a large market. And I can promise the business case that I had underwritten for our investment in Swiggy, the company has far exceeded that. And so I was completely very conservative in my projections. But yeah, that's how the first one happened, Swiggy. It was Swiggy.
Mm-hmm. And since then, give us a snapshot of what Process has done in India. I would imagine, at least to my mind, probably more of a low profile investor compared to someone a bit more flashy, like maybe a SoftBank or a Tiger Global. But in terms of impact, I would think that Process is right up there in some of the companies that you all have invested in India. So give us a snapshot of what Process has done over the years in India, so many companies. And I was reading somewhere that now, I think cumulatively, more than $10 billion invested in India.
Yeah. No, in that ballpark, Hari, and you're completely right. We've had a long and a very deep relationship with India. We, as I said, started investing in 2005. And from a Process Group perspective, we have committed to more than $7-8 billion in India technology businesses to date. And we've done most number of deals in the past 2 years. And some of them are really category defining companies. For example, Byju's and Adivantus and in EdTech, Swiggy in food delivery, Meesho, Flipkart in e-commerce, GoIBibo in travel, and I can go on and on. I think we really do believe that we've been supporters of the ecosystem and have really been fortunate to work with some of these category defining companies. And to probably take an OTT comparison here, we never think of ourselves as the stars of the show. We are what we think of in a probably in a supporting role, and we will do everything that's needed to make the show successful and the protagonists of the show successful, and therefore sort of that low profile is I would say in our DNA, but we do take pride in the fact that we have probably put a very large amount of money in India behind some very successful companies.
I want to ask you about the process model of investment, but since you brought up the point that over the last 2 years, particularly, you've made significant investments in startups, and I think folks have kind of noticed that as well. From your point of view, can you talk about what you see happening in India, because of which you've been, I can't say aggressive, but definitely very bullish in terms of investing in Indian startups?
Yeah. No, absolutely. I think, as you in fact said, that we're not a fund, we invest out of our balance sheet. And because of that approach, that gives us a couple of advantages. The first advantage, of course, is that we can take a very long-term view on opportunities. Yes. We don't need to, as you said, return money to LPs in a hurry and so on. The second one is, again, because we didn't raise money behind a mandate, we can be very flexible in our arrangement with companies. So, for example, we've done checks as small as $5 million all the way up to $650 million. And because of both those advantages, we play across stages in India. And again, I feel that India is still sort of emerging, and a lot will happen in the years to come. And therefore, again, having that sort of long-term view on the country kind of helps in being aggressive. Overall, why we like India and why we are aggressive, I think we feel we're probably still scratching the surface when it comes to proliferation of tech in the lives of people in India. There's a lot of startup activity. But in terms of market penetration, barring a couple of categories, a major chunk of spend still happens offline. And therefore, Prosus is very keen to take a look at spaces where tech-enabled disruption can meaningfully change the lives of people. Now, in some cases, this means supporting companies that are challenging the way business is done in the offline world, for example, Elasticram, or in some cases, this could mean supporting the companies that challenge the way the incumbents have done business in the tech ecosystem. Meesho is another example. And we see this happening across the sectors, consumer, brands, B2B, software, logistics, and more. And therefore, I think this ability of tech to really impact in a very positive way the lives of people kind of gives us the conviction that in India, we're still early in that curve. It's slightly unknown as to how long will it take for us to mature, and that puts us in a very beautiful position as Prosus, as someone who does not have time horizons associated to investing, to then partner with companies to realize that that potential, that opportunity. I think that's what we like about India. That's what excites us about India.
Okay, you gave kind of a very brief overview of how you like to invest in terms of not being a fund and a long-term view and so on. But maybe you could explain the process investment model to us, sort of a next level of detail, both globally in India and typically and historically, what stage do you like to invest? And then how closely do you work with founders? All of these things, just sort of walk us through the process way of doing these things.
Sure, absolutely. And look, with the caveat that this is pretty dynamic and sort of changes very often, I will tell you that there is three things that are very important to our thesis. The first one being that the impact on the society has to be meaningful. And so what that means is maybe you and I come together and we develop a product which is applicable to the top 100,000 users in India. Given their spend, maybe it will still be a decent sized company. But that's not something that we go after. So we try to invest in areas where the impact is really on a large chunk of society, on a few million people. And we can sort of later on come back to how this translates to investing in companies that are making this impact on the consumer side of things, on producer side of things, and so on. So that's very important, a large societal impact of it. The second one being the ability of tech to disrupt that space. And the reason why tech is important is probably that's the best leverage that we as an institution have seen to making large outsized companies. And I think that leverage that tech provides is very important, therefore, to our assessment of companies. Tech, and by that I mean that tech should not just be an enabler of the business, it should be disruptor. The business should not exist without tech. The third piece, of course, is the team is very important. There is the promise of India as a market. There is the promise of tech, but there has to be a team that can translate that promise to reality. And I think that, again, is very important. There is, of course, many other layers to our analysis, and like competitive dynamics and so on. But I would say if I was to think of the tentpole of our investment thesis, I think those three points come up. To begin with, as I said, we started by investing in late stage in consumer tech companies in India. What we have or how we have changed over the last few years is that we have expanded not just in terms of stage at which we come in. We've started to write early checks over the last 2-3 years, but we have also expanded our sector focus. So we've gone beyond consumer tech to B2B, the first one in B2B with Elasticrun, and then Lehart, and then Captain Fresh, Fashionza, and WeGrow more recently. But then we've also added SaaS. So we've done AirMeet, and Detect and SaaS. There's a couple of others in Pipe. And so we're just following the curve in India. And as we get more comfort in other sectors, we will continue to back teams and founders and ideas in those sectors as well. So continue to expand our focus on India, continue to expand stages that we come in, and continue to expand sectors that we invest in.
You, it's interesting that you said you kind of follow the curve in India. I'm just wondering, as a sort of a tech journalist, I'm seeing some very interesting climate tech startups coming up, entrepreneurs with some really cool ideas. I'm just thinking what the process view is globally and as well as in India. I think several people think that the whole climate opportunity could eclipse pretty much everything else. In India, how are you looking at it?
Yeah, no, and this is very true and completely aligned here, Hari, with your view that this is going to be big, not just in terms of what kind of impact it makes on the society, but also I feel in terms of sort of value creation for all of the ecosystem partners. And for that reason, we are evaluating a few ideas, not just in India, but globally as well. And there are many lenses that we are taking to this kind of investment. At one extreme of the spectrum, one could think of EVs and related solutions as sort of climate tech investments. On the other end, you can think of even like something like a synthetic biology companies that are providing feedback to, let's say, farmers on soil, or companies that are manufacturing vegetable proteins in labs and so on. So again, I mean, I'm not saying that we're there yet, but we continue to evaluate ideas here, and we will announce a couple of investments shortly in this space.
And you gave us some sort of broad stroke general points on what you look for. If you can sort of again delve into that, what are some of the checkboxes that have to be ticked for you to make an investment in a founder in the startup? And I'm also asking this in the context of how this might have changed as you've learned more about what's needed in India specifically for a startup to succeed, and and also because of how the markets changed and the end customers and consumers have changed over the years.
Look, checkboxes remain the same, Hari, all over, and I think the key ones I've already highlighted. Beyond that, I think your other question on India is very interesting, because I think it is extremely dynamic, I think extremely complex and very heterogeneous. And therefore, investing in India is, I would say, is a relatively harder task. Given the dynamism in India, one has to probably squint harder to project or understand the future, because things change on a quarterly basis here. But on the other hand, that allows you the opportunity to be very creative on what India could look like 5, 10 or 20 years out. Right? So India could, as I said, one example is Swiggy. Right? My business plan for Swiggy was very conservative when we look back. Swiggy today, for example, is doing multiple tens of millions of orders, but my business plan was like single digit million orders a month now at this time. So India could really surprise you on the upside, but I think the risk that you run is that you could be very wrong on the downside as well because of the dynamic nature of the country. Similarly, if you look at the heterogeneity of the country, right, we are a sum of many Indias, not just by people's earning potential, but also by languages we speak, also by the age of people, working, non-working, rural, urban, North India, West India, South India, and so on. And again, I think that gives the chance to someone who's spending more time in India at the grassroots level to really make a much more informed call on investments. Having that pulse of the consumer firsthand, I feel, is very important. And therefore, I think that's something that's very interesting. And that's why I think Prosus decided to open an India office before we double down on the country in a very aggressive way. Because what I feel is that that if you extrapolate too much of what's going on globally or what's happening globally, it will lead to a lot of false negatives and false positives in India. And therefore, I think in sum, I feel the complexity of the country, the heterogeneity, the dynamism gives one an opportunity to make bets which may not be obvious to people outside the country.
Yeah, in fact, that's one of the points that I wanted to ask you about. But before I get to that, I'm just trying to see if I can follow on Swiggy. To my mind, it feels like a very good example of how Prosus could bring its experience in other markets. And I'm just wondering how founders in one region might benefit from your experience in others. And you're an investor in iFood, now you basically own it. And correct me if I'm wrong, I think iFood is profitable. Swiggy is probably getting there. So I'm just wondering how your knowledge of different markets, different entrepreneurs and startups in the same sector can help each other.
Yeah. And this is an extremely important value add. And again, sort of because of that low profile nature, we don't broadcast this too much. But we have investments in 90 countries across the world, and therefore we really can help facilitate cross proliferation of a lot of best practices, especially in sectors where we have multiple investments across the country. And these synergies for me are explored and observed at various levels. So for example, a co-board member of mine on Swiggy is a gentleman called Larry, and Larry oversees a lot of food investments across the world for Naspers, and therefore as part of the board discussions, he can bring along a lot of his understanding, his knowledge of how food companies across the world are changing, adapting, and kind of best practices that they bring along. At the same time, we also facilitate a CXO level discussion between these companies, and so almost all of them are talking to each other on a very regular basis. We also try and do like once a year formal institutionalized meetup session amongst these guys, so that they can talk to each other, exchange ideas, and then we take it to the next level and bring the functional teams along together. So for example, we have a platform for the CFOs of food delivery companies to interact with each other, and not just food delivery companies, generally the companies in the India portfolio to interact with our global portfolio companies in exchange. So yes, I think you're right that there is advantages or there is synergies to be observed by investing in similar companies across the world. And these are being observed, Hari, at various different levels and through various different mechanisms. Yes.
Okay. I'm going to come back to the point you made about opportunities in the consumer trends in India that may be not so obvious to folks outside. Anything that comes to your mind that, you know, like a non-obvious opportunity, you know, that you all are actually looking at, and then you can tie that into, you know, a sense of the direction in which Prosus wants to go in India in the next 12 months, 2 years, and so on.
No, I'm not giving away the non-obvious opportunities so easily, Hari, for sure. But let me talk about a couple of trends, though. And I think as we sort of discussed previously, there was this sort of early companies, early internet companies or tech companies in India were modeled a lot after what was happening across the world. I think the first trend that we're seeing now, especially given how unique India is the trend of building in India for India. And again, not to blow my own trumpet too much, but again, so Elasticsearch is one example where they have developed a crowdsourced method to deliver in hinterlands of India, where a fixed cost model of logistics model or delivery model would not work economically. And now we are seeing people in Southeast Asia come and say that, look, we are elastic run of Indonesia, for example. So I think that's one trend that I'm seeing. The second one, again, is while a lot of large categories in India are spoken for, e-commerce, grocery, food, travel, and so on, what we are also seeing is new business models catering to the same categories. And then Meesho is one example there. Now they have come up with a business model, Hari, that attracts the next 100 million buyers on e-commerce. You and I may not be a natural buyer on Meesho, but 35 million people every month do buy something on the platform. They ship 2.5 million shipments on a daily basis, which is 25% of all e-commerce shipments in India. So I think this sort of new crop of ideas, which is catering to the next set of buyers in India, is again something that excites me a lot. And I'm looking to finding companies across verticals that will enable the next set of buyers in India to transact online.
I want to ask you about a couple of things that probably many people are seeing for the first time. Certainly, I guess the younger folk would probably be seeing it for the first time. One is, of course, this raft of unicorns we saw in India in recent times. And then now the slowdown and what that might mean for the startup ecosystem today. I'm just, maybe you can talk about, and that's also sort of one of the reasons I asked you about the direction in which Prosus wants to go over the next couple of years. And I'm wondering if you think that might be the time frame over which we'll see some kind of a turnaround from the current slowdown. And right now, what are some of the strengths and weaknesses that the slowdown is surfacing in the Indian startup ecosystem?
Sure. Let me take them one by one, Hari. I think on the question of unicorns, I think it's a very interesting one. And probably if you and I sort of generalize, we'd be doing disservice to a lot of entrepreneurs who don't think that way. Maybe some of them are thinking about that badge. But I don't think it's really important for the more grounded, sensible founders. And just to give an extreme example here, and by the way, I'm not comparing both, but I think this sort of badge of being a unicorn is, and again, I'm caveating by saying that this is an extreme example, is that I came first in my second grade exam, and I was very happy about it, right? But that did not make me a Ratan Tata or an APJ Abdul Kalam. And I think that's what we should aspire to be. That's just a milestone. That's just something that happened on the way. Me coming first and second grade didn't change anyone's life except mine, probably. And I think that's the best founders, therefore, I feel will aspire to build long-lasting, sustainable companies that will outlive you, me, and them, and then sort of create a meaningful, positive impact on society and on the country. And I think we owe it to the country. The country has given us so much, and we are so privileged to be where we are, that we owe that in return. So I think that's one on sort of unicorn. And like, honestly, we as processes are not married to the idea. We don't push our companies towards that. I would rather celebrate product market fit. I would rather celebrate product market fit at scale if a company, a portfolio of mine is short. I would rather celebrate, let's say, successful expansion outside India. I think those are very sort of meaningful. And look, if you do all of that, if you build a fundamentally sound business, valuation will happen. So I think that's that. On your question on what we think of over the next few months, so a few things. One, while the news more recently over the last couple of weeks has been exciting, promising, the crude oil prices coming down, inflation kind of tempering, not just in India but in the US also, and therefore one could make an assertion that probably we are past the trough. But on the other side, we have seen this happen many times. There's a lot of these false starts that happen in times of slowdown. So who knows? Honestly, I wish I had a crystal ball, but I don't think. But look, all this doesn't matter to us much, Hari, because as I said, we take a very long-term view. I'm not taking a four-year or five-year view on India. I am taking a 15-year, 20-year, 25, 30-year view on India. And if one is taking that long a view, a year of slowdown, 18 months of slowdown, 20 months of slowdown, doesn't really matter. It's just a blip. And if you believe, or if one believes that they have invested in fundamentally sound companies, and if they will invest in fundamentally sound companies, these companies will figure out a way to get over these smaller humps. And then in the end, in the long term, I think we will look back at this period and just, we will not be worried too much. So again, that's the other advantage of being a very long-term focused investor, that in such times also, we tend to be leaning forward than sort of leaning backward when it comes to investing. At the same time, in sort of times of frenzy also, you will see that we've not gone berserk. My portfolio is not have 50 companies, we still have 15 only. So we tend to be balanced in all times.
As both an investor and someone who's clued into what's happening in the venture scene, the other part of my question was, any interesting sort of strengths and weaknesses that you think the current slowdown has brought to the surface across different startups?
Yeah, no, I think this one is very, very interesting actually, and very reassuring, I would say. And I think the number one reason is that this time around, unlike last time, Hari, we have a lot of self-sustaining, profitable companies. So it's not as if across the board there is pain. There is a lot of companies that are EBITDA positive, cash flow positive, and so they don't really care about the slowdown, especially in the capital markets. So I think that's a great sign. That shows the strength of the companies that are being built in India. Secondly, there are pools of long-term capital like ourselves supporting the ecosystem still. So India, unlike some of the other countries, it's not paused. It's not dried up. Deals are happening. The pace may be slow, but they still happen. The third thing is, unlike the rest of the world, the domestic consumption story remains as strong. We had one of the best GDP growths last year. We are projected to grow in both real and nominal terms, the best across all Asian economies, including Indonesia, China, all of them next year. And so I think the domestic consumption story remains very strong. And lastly, I would say, especially from a public markets perspective, the domestic capital availability has also been amazing. So Indian stock markets have not taken a hit as much as other stock markets for that reason. Now, on the weaknesses front, of course, we are a very young ecosystem. And therefore, many founders that are witnessing slowdown now may not have seen this slowdown last time or the time before, right? Because it's the first time that they're founding this company. And therefore, a lot of them got very aggressive last year and will now have to course correct dramatically this year. And that will lead, and it's already leading to pain in those companies. And if you have, sometimes when you have that history, you kind of know that, look, what's coming. And so I should probably 6 months in advance get ready for that. But that has not happened properly, just because how young these companies are. And for that reason, I think some of us may need longer to reconcile with this sort of new reality. And in some cases, I also feel that excesses sort of happened over the last couple of years, and that may have shown in governance-related changes in some companies, which now the boards and the founders and senior management will have to manage now. So I think those are the weaknesses, but hopefully as the ecosystem matures, I think we will learn from past cycles and improve in the next cycles.
Okay, I do want to ask you a few questions about your own sort of personal journey as an investor and some lessons there for others. But one more question on the industry and sector. One way of looking at some of the biggest tech successes today could be that they are all now companies that may have started out as products, but which are now providers of very sophisticated, large platforms to the extent that they literally control the ecosystem in which they play. So I'm wondering, in India, if you see any early signs of any companies that show sort of promise of getting to those kinds of levels.
No, absolutely. And look, a platform can be looked at in various different ways, Hari. One is, I've built this infrastructure, what else can I use it for? Right? And I think Swiggy comes to mind. So they build this infrastructure around sort of food delivery. They're using that same infra to now provide grocery. They're using the same infra to provide, to move your documents from one place to the other. And they're using the same infra now with the new minis option. So the idea is to how to make Hari very lazy, such that he doesn't need to come out of the house, right? I'll get to him everything that he needs at home, from food to grocery to an iPhone that he wants to buy from a store in Indranagar. Meesho comes to mind as well. They build this platform for fashion, they expand into grocery, live commerce, and so on. The other way to look at it is, this build this platform for India, where else can I take it? I think Lenskart comes to mind. I think that company is done. First Cry comes to mind. Right? Both not my portfolio, but I think both of them have successfully built their infra in India, the tech in India, and have now convincingly sort of launched the same offerings outside India. And in some countries, they're early. In some countries, still some more time to go. So I think there's enough and more examples, Hari, of people using technology and also offline infrastructure to now expand it to beyond what they initially were offering.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit about your own experience. Let me start with this one. Over the years, I'm sure you kind of fine-tuned your intuition, sense, and gut feeling, and apart from, of course, the data-driven decisions on when to sort of go all in. When would you say no to an investment, even when you feel that the entrepreneur's qualifications and experience are great and the intent behind his or her idea is really worthy? Are there instances where you feel either that the idea won't work or the process is probably not the best investor there?
Yeah. No, I mean, there's two statements I will make. One is beauty lies in the eyes of the beholder in our business, right? And then investing is an art and not a science. And therefore, I think because of both those reasons, sometimes 2+2 is not 4. For me, 2+2 could be 3 in that situation, whereas if for you, Hari, it could be 2+2 is 6, and therefore you will take that bet and I won't. And it could happen for a variety of reasons, right? It could happen because of something that I've seen in the same sector in another country, which I felt was very similar to India, which probably you may not have seen, or you have seen something positive someplace else which I may not have seen. Similarly, in some situations, I may have a conflicting investment. And we don't do conflict investment. Right? For that reason, I may not go ahead and invest in that company. And I mean, I'm not saying that I'm ever right. I can be completely wrong, and I have been wrong 100 times in the past. If you look at sort of my portfolio, it looks robust, but there is a lot of anti-portfolio. There's a lot of good companies that are there which I did not invest in, and they have done amazingly well. And so I think. I think variety of reasons why we would say no, Hari, and we've done that in the past as well.
You spent several years in the earlier part of your career in the electronics industry at some very well-known companies, Motorola, Freescale, Samsung, and also Qualcomm Ventures. But again, I'm just kind of thinking, what got you thinking about finance and investments? Was there a sort of a pivotal moment and experience, or was this something that you've been thinking over a period of time?
This is the most embarrassing question you've asked, Harry. Really, honestly, because I, as I said,
want to know.
And said, I had like honestly no inclination or no idea also about investing. And what happened is when I moved from India to Korea and started working with Samsung, I was in what was called marketing. Tech marketing team, and that was the first time I got introduced to the world of P&L and sort of CAC, and not really CAC in our case, but overall marketing cost and account management and so on. And like all of a sudden, I felt that this is a much more interesting world just because of how dynamic it is, how ever-changing it is, how flexible it is. Right? Engineering is not flexible at all. It's governed by the laws of physics, I feel. In the end, how fast can an electron move from one flip-flop to the other one? And I think that's the part I liked. And that sort of suggested that to me that I should do an MBA and figure out more about this industry. And it's only after I did my summer at a venture fund in Seattle did I get to know about VC investing. I really like that and the whole experience. It was amazing. The joy of meeting very, very sharp people, and not just one, probably three of them every day. And just to learn from them was insane. It was so exciting. I used to look forward to like meeting three founders every day. And I think that's when I sort of kind of got convinced that this is what I want to do. And therefore, my full-time recruiting was then focused on VC, and then, as I said, Karthi happened from Qualcomm Ventures, and so yeah, then I landed here.
What would you say are one or two of the biggest lessons you learned in each phase of your career, first in the electronics industry and then in the investment scene?
Yeah, very, very orthogonal lessons, I must say. So I think, look, at the very top in engineering, I felt that the idea of never giving up is something that I really learned there. I felt that if I tried hard enough, I will get an answer. There is always an answer. I mean, that feeling was amazing. That if I put in the hours, I'll get the result. Similarly, everything was kind of deterministic, as I said. It either could be done or it could not be done. But you can determine. And so everything was, I felt when I was coding, was in control. And by that, what I mean is that if you fix all the input variables, you will always get the right output, the right answer. And VC is exactly the opposite. Even if you fix all the inputs, right, you may not get the answer. Two countries 10,000 miles away from India can get into a frictional situation and your answer is all over the place. What you predicted, what you projected is not happening anymore. Even if you fixed all the inputs, even if you made all the right moves. So I think that sort of non-determinism of financial world or the real world, as they call it, I think is that was my first kind of lesson here. The second one here is, I would say, is the belief in general goodness of people has gotten much stronger here. I think while the stories that largely get published or come out is of how someone scammed someone else, etc. But if you meet 100 people, I think 95 people are generally good, are nice to work with. And I'll be happy to work with any of them. So I think that the ability to meet a lot of people and then figure out the belief in general goodness of humankind is amazing. And the last one is, I feel like after meeting all these very, very sharp people, I feel human imagination is just boundless. It's like, as soon as you feel that this sector or this space, a grocery, for example, is done with big basket, there's like someone else coming with a different angle. There is Instamart, there is Blinkit, there is City Mall, and so on. So the imagination of people, especially of founders, entrepreneurs in our country, it's insane. That's the biggest lesson for me. You should never think that a space or a sector or a technology is done and there's nothing else to do.
So, you know, this thing about looking at 95 out of 100 people in general as folks who will be good and seeing the best in people, that kind of an attitude, at least in my limited experience, either comes very early in life or it takes a long time in your life to figure that out. So I'm just thinking, perhaps in your case, there were some interesting influences earlier on. Maybe you can talk about where you were born, where did you grow up, what did your parents do?
Yeah, no, very, very small town in north of India, in UP called Bareilly. That's where I grew up. And I think to your question, everyone around, especially at that time, was not, let's say, was starved for means. And I think despite that, the tendency to share, the tendency to push each other, the tendency to support, despite all of that, is something that I really grew up with, and I still treasure that. The other thing which that really helps me with, Hari, is that because I'm still connected to that ecosystem back home, I feel I get this sense, and again, maybe I'm blowing my own trumpet, I get the sense of what sort of real India still looks like, and not the top 5 million or top 10 million in India, which looks like UK or US or anything. And therefore, sort of, that helps me provide feedback to my portfolio, to founders that I meet, to say that, look, this looks very sexy, very beautiful, in the Western European context, but in the Indian context, it may be different. So I think that connection sort of still helps me a lot. Lastly, I would say because of where we were at that time, I think that hunger, that hustle, the urge to change things, the urge to improve things, I think that again has stayed with me even today.
Mm-hmm. What did your folks do? What did your parents do when you were in school?
So my father was a teacher. I think that again, we had a bunch of books at home, and I think that's the only treasure we had. And so so spent a lot of time reading, and that habit still sort of is with me. And he was a teacher of English, and so he pushed us to into reading Shakespeare much before we were supposed to read it. But yeah, I think that really helped me still. I think that variety of reading then and even now kind of helps me, I would say, analyze things much better. So it's very indebted actually to whatever that situation was when I grew up.
Okay, a couple of last questions as we begin to wrap up. If you look back, and I guess this is a kind of a standard question, if you look back, can you think of any pivotal experiences that taught you the most, whether they were setbacks or missed opportunities, and maybe you can contrast that with your biggest highs so far?
Yeah, no, I am not the one to look at sort of setbacks or missed opportunities, Hari. Like, if you start doing that, there is no end. Right, you can start from sort of very beginning and say that, look, my biggest setback was that I didn't win the DNA lottery and and so on. So I think every day I'm learning something new. Every day I'm having setbacks and so on. And that's human life. I think if there is no setback and there is no improvement and you stagnate and then that's it, you're done. I think the most pivotal movement was my internship, as I said, at Seattle, especially when it comes to the investing career. And this was at a fund which was investing in distressed assets. And so one was, of course, the understanding of analytical rigor and this, that, when you analyze balance sheets and so on. But just to be close to someone, a founder or an entrepreneur who was in distress, I think that taught me the most. That taught me one lesson that look, investing is not all about numbers. It's a lot about what kind of support you can provide when in the time of when in these messy times. And I think that's what I try and sort of strive to do still in my sort of investing world or investing work.
Okay, just a little bit of trivia that I'm going to take 30 seconds because I can't resist saying that over here. This thing about the DNA lottery, I think a lot of truly successful people who are also very chilled out and very comfortable in their own skin have figured this thing out. In fact, recently I saw Sridhar Vembu tweet that the biggest decision in your life that you have no say in is who your parents are, and if you come to terms with that, then you can pretty much own your life. So
completely.
Yeah. So, okay, last question. What advice would you give someone aspiring to a career in venture capital in India today?
No, I just have one advice. Which is differentiate, separate, make yourself unique. I think the world, and this is what I give to my team as well, the world where one thought that I have proprietary access to a deal, or I know how to do retention charts better, or I know how to do LTV to CAC better, or I know how to do addressable market analysis better, I think that world's over. All these skills are commodity. And therefore, you need to bring something sort of very unique to the table. Alpha is gone. And so you need to create that alpha by differentiating yourself. Either you focus on a sector, or you focus on a stage, or do you focus on one of the functional areas? You bring sort of special product marketing skills to the table, and that's why a founder loves to work with you, and that's why you get access to the deal, right? I think that's what you do. That's what investing will be 5, 10, 15 years from now.
Excellent. Wonderful conversation, Ashutosh. Thank you so much again, sir, for making time for this. I definitely hope to keep the conversation going.
Absolutely. My pleasure, Hari. Thanks for the invitation.
All right. That is Ashutosh Sharma, Head of Investments and M&A at Prosys India. That's it for this week's Startup Fridays. Wherever you've been listening to us, I hope you're staying safe and doing well. I'll be back next week with another conversation. Until then, have a wonderful Friday and a great weekend ahead.